You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Jamie Spence.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Race to Dubai show, all about one of the year's blockbuster events, the 41st Ryder Cup, which ended in a tremendous 17 points to 11 victory for the US team and their captain, Davis Love III.
Everybody that played on the team or didn't play on the team showed that we had a lot of heart and we can pull together, and I'm just super proud of them. And for everybody that's ever been a part of the Ryder Cup, we all pulled together for this one.
So the United States triumphed at Hazeltine, but Darren Clarke was quick to recognise the efforts of his European team.
The players give me everything. I couldn't have asked for 1 ounce more. Unfortunately, we're going back home without the trophy, but we will be fighting hard for it again in Paris in 2 years' time.
We look back at 3 days of stunning golf, hear from many of the key Ryder Cup figures from both sides, and speak exclusively to record point scorer Thomas Peters. Plus, we'll speak to Europe's next captain at Le Golf National in 2018, Thomas Bjorn. Hello, I'm Robert Lee, and I'm joined once more by European Tour stalwart Jamie Spence, who was part of Europe's backroom team at Hazeltine, as he has been at previous Ryder Cups. Jamie, we'll get into the key moments and emotions and those three supercharged days in a moment, but as an event with 24 of the world's best players, how was it with that crowd?
Yeah, it was a great buzz on that first tee, music blaring out all morning. But I played that course the year before, you know, the year to go, and I thought it was pretty long, you know, pretty difficult. But the standard of the golf there from all the players there, the way they hit the golf ball, the way they make some of those difficult holes just look so easy was just extraordinary under that sort of pressure. That's my overabiding memory.
And I've got a heavy cloud sitting above me because I'm now introducing American legend broadcaster Bob Bubka to the table, who is, of course, very chipper because the Americans won, Bob. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It certainly was an incredible experience. The real winner of that weekend at Hazeltine, in my opinion, was the sport of golf, because it was so well received. The matches were so hotly contested. As Jamie just alluded to, the level of golf was simply incredible.
How about the atmosphere, Bob, with the crowds? They were very vocal and very raucous, but it seemed like a lot of fun.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I mean, the best example I can give of how much they were enjoying it, you know, on Sunday, the first singles match goes out at 11 in the morning. Well, at 5:30 that morning, the bleachers around that first tee were beginning to fill up. I mean, people were willing to sit there for 3-4 hours in anticipation of the first ball being struck at 11 o'clock. Everybody that was there when they were leaving to a tee said it was the most fun they've ever had at any athletic event. It truly was an incredible 3 days.
Before we get into the nuts and bolts of the match itself, in the practice times, Jamie, there was a little bet that one of the punters had with Justin Rose with $100 bills stapled to the green that he was putting on. What was that all about?
Yeah, that was great, wasn't it? They couldn't hold a putt, left a righter across the green, and someone was heckling him from the crowd, and they dragged him out, and he drained it.
And won the 100.
Yeah, it was great. That's what it's all about. Bob, do you think the European crowds are as vocal when the American team come over here to our side of the pond?
I really do. I mean, I think the U.S. has learned from the European Ryder Cup fans over the last 20 years or so. You know, there's no more electrifying atmosphere than being at a Ryder Cup when it's on European soil. And the Americans, I think, finally have wised up and said, hey, if we can duplicate that type of energy, it'll enhance our chances of winning. And it certainly came to bear at Hazeltine.
Well, I'm very pleased to say that later on in the show, we'll be joined by Thomas Peters, who, of course, won 4 points in his rookie Ryder Cup. An extraordinary performance from the Belgian. We'll hear from him later. But let's get into the actual Ryder Cup itself. Before it started, Darren Clarke's team comprised of McIlroy, Willett, Stenson and Chris Wood. That's from the European points list. And then they were joined by Garcia, Cabrera-Bello, Justin Rose, Sullivan and Matthew Fitzpatrick from the world points list. And the three picks for Clarke were Thomas Peters, Martin Kaymer and Lee Westwood. Into the Ryder Cup itself with those three picks, Jamie, would you have changed them in any way?
No, I wouldn't, and I don't think anybody else. Hindsight's a beautiful thing, isn't it? And I mean, Alex Noren's done some fantastic things since then. He won 2 events pre the picks, but no one said, oh, we've got to pick Alex Noren right then. Probably would now. Russell Knox was a potential, obviously, as was Luke Donald was touted because he finished runner-up. But really, I don't think anybody could complain with Kaymer and Westwood. In fact, if you were going to leave anybody out, it would have been Peters, and look what he proved.
Look what he did.
So, yeah. No, the thing from the European point of view for me is it's the changing of the guard. McDowell, Poulter, Bjorn, Donald, you throw in Casey to that that none of those players
they're
were
kind of moving out towards
it
the top end.
Seems that way
they?
A little bit, Rob.
Yeah. Well, in the American team, Davis Love III had Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Mickelson, Reed, Walker, Brooks Koepka, Brant Snedeker and Zach Johnson. They qualified as the top eight, but there was a bit of contention because Ricky Fowler, Matt Kuchar and JB Holmes were picked alongside Ryan Moore after his performance in the Tour Championship. But Bubba Watson was left out, Bob, as the world number seven.
Yeah, there was really a lot of confusion surrounding that Bubba Watson omission, ranked number seven in the world. And there was some reports coming out that he was a little bit toxic in the clubhouse. So that's why he was left off the team. Then they made him an assistant captain, where the only place he could function was in the clubhouse. So I never really quite understood that. Bubba Watson ended up doing a fabulous job as the vice captain, and it all worked out well. But probably he should have been picked initially by Davis Love.
And going into the matches, Jamie, Danny Willett's brother made a few comments that probably didn't help the Europeans at all.
No, it didn't. Certainly not. The mood in the European camp was really strong, really positive. Practice went really well, and that really put him on a bit of a back foot. Media-wise, I think, Rob, and PR-wise, with PJ Willett's article and subsequent tweets, I think he just needed to back off and realise he wasn't helping his brother out here. Or the team, just make an apology. I know it was tongue-in-cheek, the article. It wasn't designed as a serious
piece of journalism. Last thing you want to do, though, is wind up the opposition crowd.
Yeah, and he did that, and it just gave them a stick just to beat us with a little bit. No, but apart from that, the spirits are really strong. Paul O'Connell came in, the Irish rugby captain, gave a great speech, and their Dynamo, the magician, who was in the team room for about a good hour and a half as well. So it was a great, great, great vibe, as it always is.
They should have got him to magic them up some points.
Well, yeah, that question was asked.
But what about in the American camp? What were you hearing from them?
Well, they were really optimistic. There was a lot on the line, especially since Phil Mickelson teed off on Tom Watson when we were at Glen Eagles, and a lot of changes were made to the, you know, our Ryder Cup preparation, the task force that you heard so much about it. And it's really ironic because after the victory, the task force gets all the credit. I can assure you, had we lost at Hazeltine, everybody would have been saying, what the heck did you have a task force for? You don't need a task force. All you have to do is make more putts. For years, no matter what you do, as long as you win, it's the greatest thing in the world. And no matter what you do, if you lose, it's the worst thing in the world.
In Medina, the miracle of Medina, when the Europeans won, Bob, everyone was talking about the spirit of Seve looking over them. He was part of the psyche of the European team. Was that the same this time for the Americans after the passing of Arnold Palmer?
I think that it definitely was a factor. They had Arnold Palmer's bag when he was the captain back in 1975. It was out on the first tee. And, you know, Arnold Palmer in the United States is so revered, but he's a figure that's revered around the world. And I can't help but think every American player, when they got to that first tee and they looked over and they saw that golf bag there, just a little bit of inspiration. I mean, the differences between the talent of the players is so close, just any little edge. And I think maybe the spirit of Arnold Palmer was that extra edge.
Interesting. Well, let's get to the match itself then. Friday morning, it was foursomes. They were loading from the top. Both captains, Spieth and Reed, took on Rose and Stenson, and Spieth and Reed won 3-2. Mickelson and Fowler took care of McIlroy and Sullivan 1-up. Walker and Zach Johnson beat Garcia and Kiemer 4-2. Dustin Johnson and Kuchar beat Peters and Westwood 5-4. The first opening 4-0 session for the Americans since 1981, and the Americans in foursomes made 19 birdies to Europe's 8 on Friday morning. Jamie, how much of a seismic shock was that to the European team?
Yeah, huge. Who could see that coming? Certainly not the European team, and there was a bit of shock in the room, it has to be said. You don't expect that. Rose and Stenson, I think for Spieth and Reed to beat them, really put down a marker. Rory wanted to play with Andy Sullivan. They performed pretty well, really, you'd have to say, but Mickelson and Fowler just outdid them there on the last day. And really, the other two games, we weren't in it, really. So tough for Darren, tough for the losing captain, really, because halfway around that morning round, he's got to put his afternoon pairings down, and that's not easy when you're getting stuffed.
How much did the stuffing affect how he put out his team in the afternoon?
Yeah, I think it did throughout the rest of the matches, Rob, because Darren's playing catch-up, and maybe he put his key pairings, Rose, Stenson out all the time, and which you've got to do. You've got to rely on your top players. Rory played five games, put Sergio out there. And from the rookies' point of view, they're not going to get such a... If you're in front, you can afford to play maybe the rookies a little bit more. But I don't think Darren felt he had much choice.
And what about for the Americans, Bob? It must have been the dream start. They must have been so confident after that.
Well, it was just incredible. They never thought that they would win all four matches. And as we alluded to earlier in the show, there certainly was a lot of pressure on the United States team to perform well. And as Jamie said, really a surprise to win all four matches. I highlight one shot by Andy Sullivan, because we had talked leading up to the Ryder Cup that he was going to be playing with McIlroy. They played a lot of practice rounds together, and it was coming down the wire, and Andy Sullivan hit that shot, and it just came up maybe a yard or two shy, goes in the water, and I think it affected Andy Sullivan for the rest of the weekend. Had it carried just another yard or two, things could have been a lot different.
Well, into the afternoon, four balls with Europe on the reshuffle and on the back foot, and the Americans in a fantastic position. Actually, Europe turned it around. They won 3-1 the afternoon four ball session. Rose and Stenson beat Spieth and Reed 5-4. Garcia and Cabrera Bay, the all Spanish pairing, beat Holmes and Moore 3-2. Snedeker and Koepka, the only American point in the afternoon four balls, they beat Kiemer and Willett 5-4. McIlroy and Peters took care of Dustin Johnson and Matt Kuchar 3-2. So, with the despair from the morning session, Jamie, it must have been a very different atmosphere after Friday afternoon.
Yeah, you've got to fight back, and you've got some quality players in the European team. I just couldn't see Rose and Stenson losing twice in a day, and they didn't. They came out all guns blazing, 5-4 to beat Spieth and Reed. Cabrera Bayo was a revelation, playing with his compatriot Sergio Garcia, and they won. Kiemer and Willett, it just didn't happen for them, didn't play well enough. Maybe Danny was affected by his brother, I don't know, but he was buzzing coming into the week. It just didn't play well enough in that opening afternoon. And then Rory McIlroy and Thomas Peters, wow, what a pairing they are. Hit the ball absolute miles, really complimented each other.
But
play great.
Do you think that pairing was one that was stumbled upon?
I think so, yeah. And that's going to happen.
You've got to roll with the punches, haven't you?
Of course you have. Dustin Johnson and Kuchar, I mean, they're not so bad themselves, are they?
So for the Americans, Bob, after a brilliant start in the morning, not quite so good in the afternoon, maybe time for reflection.
Well, there was a lot of concern in that American team room on Friday evening, because all the jubilation that occurred hours earlier when they went up 4 points to nil was eliminated as Europe came battling back, and then we knew it was going to be a battle to the end. And certainly a different look on Davis Love's face on Friday evening than the one we saw at Friday lunchtime.
So the score was 5-3 to the United States going into Saturday morning's foursomes, which the Europeans came back and won again. And Jamie, let's just go through the results first. McIlroy and Peters, a dynamic duo, beat Fowler and Mickelson 4-2. Snedeker and Koepka won an American point. They beat Stenson and Fitzpatrick 3-2. Rose and Wood beat Walker and Zach Johnson 1-0. That was a very tight game. And all square between Sergio and Rafael Cabrera Bayo against Reed and Spieth. That's a tough American pairing. But all in all, Europe 2.5, America 1.5 in the session. That was massive for Captain Clark.
It was a big one, because he's bringing in Matt Fitzpatrick, Chris Wood as well, and he split up the Stenson and Rose axis and paired them up with Wood and Fitzpatrick respectively. Got a share out of those two games, 1-1 and lost one. Good half, as you say, from the Spaniards, and McIlroy and Peters just kept rolling on. So great result for Europe, just to bring it back down to a point.
I wonder, Bob, as far as Team America are concerned, because going into the Saturday afternoon four balls, the score was 6.5 America, Europe 5.5. Was there a sense of, oh, here we go again with the Americans, here come the Europeans?
Well, it was close to that, Rob. I wouldn't say that was the popular sentiment. They knew that, you know, the European team was going to be a formidable foe, and they were ready. I mean, they were still ahead, and I think that's the key factor. You know, if you fall behind, then the sentiment of, oh, here we go again, more likely to pop up. But they were still in the lead. Things were going their way, and I think they were still full of confidence.
Well, I think their confidence must have been waning slightly, because Europe were within 1 point heading into the afternoon four balls, which the Americans then came back and won very well, 3-1 in that last session of team play before we get to the Sunday singles. So McIlroy and Peters won again, beating Koepka and Dustin Johnson 3-1. But Holmes and Moore won for the Americans, Willett and Westwood losing 1-1. Mickelson and Kuchar beat Kiemer and Garcia 2-1. And Reed and Spieth again in that anchor role, taking care of Rose and Garcia, 2-1. McIlroy and Peters just kept it going, Jamie. They were unbeatable.
It looked that way, didn't it, Rob? Great pairing. Crucial afternoon this was. Darren obviously had to shuffle his pack. Stenson dropped out. He brought in Willett and Westwood and Keimer, and it just didn't happen for them. The crucial game was Holmes and Moore. Willett and Westwood, they were up with three to play, weren't they?
Two to play.
Both them bogey 17 and both had chances for birdie. I mean, Westwood had a two-footer. I'm sure if they did it again, Westwood would putt first and keep Willett in reserve.
We all talk about the 18th green, but really you've got to look back at 17. They're one up, and in four-ball, better-ball, they made a bogey.
Yeah, and just off the green. You'd expect one of them. I mean, sticky rough and the rest of it, and difficult situation. But listen, they know. We don't need us telling us, but that was the game. Two all there. You know, you've got a one-point game going into Sunday, but that was the game.
That was absolutely critical. And Bob, once again, then, if you were worried about the Europeans coming back, the Americans cock a hoop heading into the singles.
Well, the sad part about what transpired on Saturday afternoon was it was quite evident how much Lee Westwood was trying to justify that pick by Darren Clarke. I mean, Lee Westwood was in position on that 17th hole, again on 18. He had it right in his hand. It was gift wrap for him to say, thank you, Darren Clarke, for picking me. Look what I did. And that little putt just wouldn't go in. And, you know, I think right then and there, the tone was set for what was going to transpire on Sunday.
Yeah, and what about the team room for the Europeans, Jamie, with the last session before the singles going down 3-1? What was the European feeling on what might happen on Sunday?
Lots of chat, obviously a big team meeting that evening, which went incredibly well. Darren Clarke speaks so well. That surprised me during the week. Darren was fantastic talking to his team all week long. And there was a genuine belief in that team. And why wouldn't there be when you look back to Medina that it was possible? Everyone had to take care of their own match, obviously. But yeah, they weren't out of it, obviously. Rather be just a point behind to keep the Americans under pressure. But you know what it's like in Ryder Cup. You can win those first three or four games and get that blue on the board.
Is that the point Darren kept pressing? Look,
yeah,
the first four.
Yeah. Of course, you get some blue on the board, it has repercussions further down the list for the guy just about to go out, puts pressure on them.
And after the miracle at Medina, Bob, for the Europeans, where we came back from 4 points down, there must have been some chat in the American team room about don't let this happen again.
Well, that's exactly the conversation. And when we look back at that critical first match, you know, Rory McIlroy, many could argue the best player in the world at the time, and going up against Patrick Reed. And I mean, it was just electrifying. Not only, you know, the crowd was completely in it, the caliber of golf was remarkable. I mean, Darren Clarke had every right to think that Rory McIlroy would be able to pull that match out and get the tide rolling towards Europe. I mean, not enough credit has been given to Patrick Reed for holding off Rory McIlroy in that first match. And you look down to that fourth match, Justin Rose could have been a victor there. And so it would have been all 4 points for Europe on Sunday morning. And I think then we would have had a definite different outcome.
Well, Sunday singles, there was a 3-point deficit, 9.5 to 6.5 in favour of the Americans. And as you mentioned, Bob, Reed and McIlroy, there was no captain skullduggery here. It's just our best player against your best player. And on you go, toe-to-toe. And for eight holes, Jamie, it was the most spellbinding golf you've ever seen, with the crowd playing their part as well.
Yeah, they sort of run out of puff in the end, didn't they? Because they just put so much into those first 8-9 holes. The golf was just incredible. The putts were holding, especially that.
The eighth hole
was just unbelievable. And it's quite funny that our team spoke about not reacting to the crowd the night before, but how could you not react to that
crowd? I've never seen Rory as pumped as that.
Or Peters or any of them, really. Yeah. You know, they were reacting to the crowd. Yeah, that's great. That was what it's all about. But
absolutely.
Yeah, that was the game, wasn't it? McIlroy, Reed. I mean, maybe in hindsight, you could have put somebody out first against Reed, but who's to know what... You can double guess yourself, so you've got to go strong.
You want your best player to make a statement, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, had Rory or Justin... You're not going to win all of them, you know that.
Yeah.
But if we won four out of the first five instead of the three...
There's no point putting Rory in fifth or sixth, is there?
No.
Because you've got to win the first three or four. You've got to win them.
And I was in the team room with Rory afterwards, just Rory upstairs. And
he would have fancied the job. He knew he was getting Reed.
If you put Rory out six, he would have gone mad.
Yeah.
So he wanted to lead the way. And to be fair, he did. He just got just outplayed by Patrick Reed, who was inspired.
Isn't it amazing, Jamie and Bob, from a European point of view, when we've had a lot of success in recent Ryder Cups, you don't really notice, because it's your boys, how many putts you hold. But my goodness me, I noticed, particularly on Singles Sunday, how many putts the Americans hold.
Well, it was incredible. I mean, every time they got to another hole, one opponent would have a long putt, and you'd say, well, Under normal conditions, he might make this, but not under Ryder Cup Sunday pressure. And lo and behold, it would go in. You know, McIlroy and Patrick Reed, I think the quality combined of the putting of those two guys was simply mind-boggling. And Rory McIlroy knew. He knew he had to perform well, and he did. The fact that Patrick Reed responded in that manner is just incredible when you consider Patrick Reed's never had a top 10 in a major, and yet under the brightest of spotlights on that Sunday in singles going against Europe's best, he really came through. And I think that was the ultimate, you know, game changer.
We could see from Glenn Eagles that Patrick Reed really got it. He really reveled in the atmosphere of a Ryder Cup. That was an away fixture. And we knew as Europeans in the home fixture, he was going to amp it up and really get the crowd going. And he did. And Patrick Reed was brilliant. He beat Rory McIlroy, one up, very close game. But it was an important victory for the Americans. And then Stenson and Peters came through beating Spieth and Holmes. That was some good news for Darren Clarke. Fowler beat Rose, one up. And then Cabrera Bayer beat Jimmy Walker 3-2. So then we needed some blue to make it competitive from the European point of view. But then it was a kind of a landslide for the Americans from that point forward.
Yeah, it was really. Justin just didn't putt well enough. He had plenty of chances against Ricky. It just didn't happen for him. Cabrera Bayer was a success story of the week for the European team. Played great beating Jimmy Walker. Mickelson-Garcia match was sensational golf.
19 birdies?
Yeah, just sensational golf. No one deserved to lose that game. And then after that, really, I thought Lee Westwood played some good stuff, you know, Saturday and Sunday. He just getting beaten at the last there. So he shouldn't be too harsh on Lee. And then after that, it was tough for the rookies down the bottom there. Chris Wood fought valiantly against Dustin Johnson and Matt Fitzpatrick out at the end. They're never a nice spot to play, number 12.
Against a tough old cookie, Zach Johnson.
Oh, yeah, very good player.
So just to wrap up those final singles, Mickelson and Garcia tied. Moore beat Westwood, one up. Snedeker beat Andy Sullivan, 3-1. Dustin Johnson took care of Chris Wood, one up. But as Jamie said, a really good game. Koepka beat Danny Willett, 5-4. Kiemer actually won the 11th match, beating Kuchar, one up. Zach Johnson beat Matthew Fitzpatrick, 4-3. All in all, it was 17 to the United States, 11 to Europe. But Bob, it's a big win in the end, but it didn't feel that far, the gap that big, when you were actually watching the match on the Sunday.
Well, certainly a lot of junctures on Sunday. We were thinking about, wait a minute, we were four up after the first session, and now we're on the threshold of maybe not going on the victory, but everybody played well on the United States team. And, you know, the Sunday singles are really the barometer of the Ryder Cup. 15 of the last 19 winners of the Ryder Cup are the team that won the most points on Sunday. So, you know, a couple of reversals, and we could have had a completely different outcome, but I keep going back and because it really was the pivotal point. It was that McIlroy-Reed match. I mean, had that gone in McIlroy's favor, I'm not so confident that the U.S. would have gotten that Ryder Cup back.
Well, that was, as you already spoken about it glowingly, that the Reed-McIlroy match was incredible. But what about the Mickelson-Garcia match, Bob?
Well, I spoke to Sergio Garcia after they came in for the press conference, and he looked like a deer in headlights. And I've been friends with Sergio a long time, and I said, boy, you really played great. He said, can you believe the amount of putts that Phil Mickelson made against me? And he just kept saying that over and over again, like he couldn't believe what he witnessed. That was a match for the ages. I mean, you know, Phil Mickelson now, 45 matches in Ryder Cup play, just one shy of the all-time record of 46 held by Nick Faldo. So for Mickelson at that juncture in his career to put up that kind of performance against Sergio Garcia was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it was spellbinding, and worth mentioning that Ryan Moore, who was the last man to get picked in Davis Love's side, actually hold the winning putt, did the deed, and, well, that's something he'll remember for the rest of his life. OK, let's hear now from some of the key figures in the 41st Ryder Cup, starting with the victorious U.S. captain, Davis Love III.
You know, this team had to come together, and, you know, we lost Arnold Palmer on Sunday. That was tragic for the golf. It was a blow to our team, obviously, to start off the week. And so many crazy things have happened, but we've been criticized for 8 or 10 years for not coming together. And everybody that played on the team or didn't play on the team showed that we had a lot of heart and we can pull together. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, I was put in this position is because everybody felt like we could all get together and trust around this plan. And I'm humbled that they put me in this position, and everything that's happened has just been very, very special to these 12 and then six captains.
Do you think the Europeans have taught the Americans that the value of, you know, unity, bonding between team members?
Yeah, I think they've. You do, don't you? You look at the opposition, think why are they beating us? What are we not doing? And they've done that. I mean, I just think the American team had a very strong side this year, and Darren knew that. I mean, I've done four of these now, working in the back room, whatever, making sure the coffee's hot, whatever. But in my opinion, that was the strongest US team we faced in that time. So,
but you know,
on their soil, it's tough to beat Americans on their own patch.
In the end, it's a two-horse race, and if you started on the Monday after the Sunday and played the same players over another 3 days, you might get a different result.
Yeah, maybe, Rob, but
that's the way it is.
It's tough to win in America, isn't it?
Yeah, of course
we got
it is.
Stuffed in Valhalla, really. Medina, it was a miracle. How we won that,
yeah.
I do not know. The only one we've really dominated is Oakland Hills back there in 2004. The rest, we've done well to win.
It's a hard scrape and fight.
Oak Hill,
and
we were behind.
Yeah, it is.
So,
it's
difficult. It's tough to win over there.
Well, here's another perspective on that positive change in the United States camp from Jordan Spieth.
I think it was just a bit more relaxed. We just had a little more confidence in each other. We all, you know, walked through the team room telling each other how good they were, just believing in each other and making sure that we made that known to them. You just kind of stepped onto the first tee feeling like you weren't in uncharted territory, that you were supposed to be there and you were supposed to execute in that position. You know, that was the difference for me, at least. You know, I can't speak for everybody, but I got on the first tee and just felt I was going to make birdies that day. And 2 years ago, I felt that, hey, this is a grind. This is a new experience.
Bob, how much credit must go down to Davis Love III? Because after he led the team for 2 days at Medina and they had the 10-6 lead going into the singles, it looked like he'd had the perfect captaincy. Then he got hit by an unbelievable performance from the Europeans. Were you surprised he got picked again as a captain?
Well, Davis Love's a very popular figure over here. And the bottom line was, you know, he shouldn't have lost at Medina. It only took place because of an incredible performance by the European side. And there really was nobody in position that could have been a better captain than Davis Love. So they said, hey, let's give him another shot. Maybe it'll be a little added motivation for the United States side in trying to win one for the captain. And it certainly worked out. I mean, but, you know, Ryder Cup, it's always the same. You know, I mean, the PGA of America, which controls the United States Ryder Cup team, you know, they got all types of glory heaped upon them for picking Davis Love to guide them to victory at Hazeltine. But had he lost, they would have been criticized with the comments of, hey, he lost once. Why would you give him another chance?
You think he might be captain again, Jamie?
We doubt it. There's so many other players who are worthy of that honour. It'd be unusual if they give him a third one. You never know, though. I think the pressure was on Davis Love, no doubt about it, especially after that task force, as Bob said. So,
well,
yeah,
from
a human point of view, you know, you've got to be pleased for him, haven't you? Because the team pulled it out for him.
OK, let's get a European perspective now and hear from Captain Darren Clark.
We were very comfortable with all the decisions we made. And, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But even with that, we wouldn't have made any decisions. So Ryder Cups, as you've seen with the quality of the golf, it's a putt lipped in here or a putt holed outside your opponent there makes all the difference. When you're talking about golf of this standard, that makes the difference. And unfortunately for us this year, we didn't quite hole them, and the Americans did.
The temptation, Jamie, to double guess yourself as a captain must be enormous.
When you win, you're a hero. When you lose, you're not. And what more could Darren do, really? People start talking about his picks, but no one was criticising them before. In fact, the only rookie he picked won 4 points, so that was a pretty good pick, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. How collaborative is it, though, you know, with the vice-captains? How much of a heads-together thing is it?
Listen, that's the whole point of having your vice-captains. I'm sure Davis did the same, speaking to them before the event and talking about picks and this, that and the other, and pairings. When you get beat 4-0 on the first day, first morning, you know, that changes everything, and you've got to react. And Darren did, and he said to me, do you think, you know, should I have done anything different? And at the time, you sort of think, well, no, what more can you do?
Do you think, Bob, the fact that we've had six rookies blooded now this time is good news for Europe going forward?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's nothing like Ryder Cup experience. But listening to Darren Clark, I couldn't help but think of Tom Lehman, who went to Dublin as United States captain and got thoroughly trounced, and he did everything right. And I think Darren Clark did everything right. But there can only be one winner. And this time, fortunately for the United States and fortunately for the Ryder Cup, it was the U.S. squad setting the scene early for what's going to transpire in 2018 when we go to France.
How tough is it for a rookie, Jamie, to turn up at your first Ryder Cup?
I think rookies in the past have performed very well. You just look at Cabrera Bayo, 2.5 points out of 3. Peters, 4 out of 5. Chris Wood, 1-1. I thought Andy Sullivan was unlucky not to play more, maybe. He played pretty well that first day. Bob talked about that shot on 17. It didn't happen for Willett and Fitzpatrick, but I thought our rookies played very well.
Well, I'm very pleased to say that joining us on the line is the man who won 4 points as a rookie for the Europeans at Hazeltine, Thomas Peters. Thomas, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
You got a little bit of downtime now after the excitement of Hazeltine?
Yes, I'm enjoying my downtime. I went to Bali last week and I'm just relaxing at home right now.
Just before we get into the match itself, for you to qualify or to impress upon Darren Clark that you should get a pick, you had to play awfully well at the Made in Denmark. What was the pressure like there, having to play with the captain in the tournament?
There was a lot of it for sure. Knowing that everybody's looking at you and having to come through at the time was not an easy task, but I thought I handled it nicely, and it was probably the highlight of the year, just to the way I played my way in.
Yeah, you were superb in Denmark, and the way you closed out the tournament was amazing. 3 birdies in the last 3 holes. Then you get to Hazeltine. What was that experience like as you built your way up towards the first tee on Friday?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. One of the coolest things I've ever done. The scale of the tournament was just so huge. It was unlike anything I've ever played and probably will ever play, hopefully I'll play a lot more, but I haven't played the Olympics just before. It was something really cool, but then coming to the Ryder Cup was extra special. It was just so huge. But it was fun to play, and of course I enjoyed my experience a lot.
And what about the first tee, Thomas, out there in Hazeltine? Just what was that like walking over that bridge towards that tee? Just can you talk us through it?
Having my parents there, my sister, just family around, and looking at them, and this is kind of the stuff you've dreamed of and you've worked for your whole life, and to be 24 and walking over that bridge is pretty cool. And I wasn't that nervous on the first day, I must admit. It was just more excitement than nervousness, and it went pretty, I played well with Lee. I think we were both maybe just a bit too anxious to get started, and we made some mistakes, but settled down in the afternoon and just started enjoying it a lot.
You went out with Rory, and what a partnership. How well did you know Rory before Hazeltine?
Not very well, but he's an easy guy to get along with. As everybody knows, he's a great guy, and he's got good manners. He's nice to everybody, and obviously he's the best player in the world. So it was quite easy playing with him.
How much fun did you have with the crowd?
I didn't interact as much as the other guys, trying to quiet them down or anything like that. But I got a lot of support from the Americans, actually, because I went to school in Illinois, and I had a lot of fans shouting. So it was 10% of their side was on my side, so that was quite nice.
Off the golf course, Thomas, how did you enjoy the week? What were the highlights for you?
Just being around the team room with the guys, just getting to know them a bit better, like Rafa and Sergio, and I didn't really know Chris Wood or Danny, and they're all really good guys, and it was just fun to get to know Darren Clark as well. He's an amazing captain, I thought.
Having experienced the Ryder Cup, I know you didn't get the result that you wanted because the Americans just were the better team over the 3 days. Does it make you even more determined to make the next team?
Oh, for sure. I do not want to miss this one again until I can't play anymore. I definitely have my sights set for the next how many I can play.
You've experienced what it's like to be at an away venue with an American crowd. What do you think it might be like when you get to Paris with a European crowd?
I actually think it's a bit less rowdy. I think we have less angry sports fans than the Americans do. So we'll just wait and see.
Did you think when you got there, Thomas, because you're obviously young and fit, that you might play 5 times?
No, I had an idea. I might play 3 or 4, but not 5, not at all. For Darren to put that much belief and trust in me to play 5 was a difficult decision on his part, I thought, but I came through for him and kind of proved him right.
And if you take one memory, one little bit of Hazeltine away with you, with your experience that you had there with your comrades and the opposition as well, what would it be?
Just in the team room, even though we lost, it was nice to see everybody come together and as a team, and we were really disappointed, but we were very determined to make it a different result in Paris, and everybody kind of got over it pretty soon and had a good time afterwards.
Where are we going to see you on a golf course, Thomas, next year? Where are you planning on starting?
I will be in Abu Dhabi. That will be my first one, so you'll see me there.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you in the new year. We were thrilled with your game and your performance at Hazeltine, Thomas. You were just an absolute standout star. So have a great Christmas, have a great holiday and a rest, and we're looking forward to all the golf that you're going to play in 2017.
Thank you very much, guys.
You can tell Jamie and Bob that Thomas really enjoyed the experience, and why wouldn't you when you can, you know, I guess you kind of suck it and see as you go along, and after losing on the first morning, to then go on and win every other match after that was just extraordinary.
I think the fact that Darren played with him quite a bit last year, he had a high impression of Thomas Peters, and the fact that he put him straight back out there Friday afternoon told you a story, and Thomas...
With Rory.
Yeah, with Rory, and Thomas delivered. I mean, someone hits the ball 330 and he can pitch and putt as well. He's some player.
He really is an extraordinary talent. So Thomas Peters was the top performer overall, but the biggest point scorer for the US was Patrick Reed with 3.5 points.
You know, anytime I get to wear red, white and blue, it means so much to me. And anytime I can represent my country, it's just amazing. You know, it gives me goosebumps every time. And then having my first team event actually finally at home, in front of all of our fans, have them all cheering our names, and to go out there and play the way I did this week, I don't even know really what to say.
Bob, what's funny about that is obviously that match with Rory, they're both shouting so much he's lost his voice.
Yeah, it was incredible to watch, and I admired the sportsmanship. If a great shot or a great putt was made by Rory McIlroy, Patrick Reed was quick to acknowledge, and the reverse was true. If Rory McIlroy made a great putt, Patrick Reed, nodded or said something. They put sportsmanship in the forefront during that match, coupled with the quality of golf, and it'll go down in history as one of the legendary singles matches ever to be played in Ryder Cup history.
Yeah, overall, Bob, with an amped-up crowd, how do you think they behaved?
I think, there was some exceptions to the rule, but when you get 50-plus thousand people that have arrived early and beer sales, began at 7 a.m. in the morning, you're bound to have somebody that abused the situation. But I think overall, it was good. I mean, could it have been better? Yes. Where across the line for me is when there was yelling prior to somebody hitting a shot. I mean, booing a bad shot is one thing. But yelling out when somebody's in their backswing, there's just really no place for that in golf. Certainly no place for it in Ryder Cup.
Things are changing, Jamie, though, in the world of sports, because the days when, oh, good shot, rather well played, that's all gone now. It's all high-octane stuff, and, we spend a lot of time in the media pumping up the Ryder Cup, and when the crowd get there, they're going to have their day.
Yeah, I'm all for it, Rob, providing it's respectful, as Bob said. Be as loud as you like, cheer on your own players, and even if Europeans or Americans hit a poor shot and you want to cheer it, do it after the shot.
After the hit.
Do what you like, yeah. Cheer and shout as loud as you like. And the first tee there, one of my abiding memories is the first tee. It was a really, really great place to be. So much noise, and how those guys hit the quality of shots off that first tee. Everything must have been shaking, surely. Oh, even for these guys.
Even
they all
for these
talk
guys,
about it.
Yeah.
It's something else. So if you go to Ryder Cup, you get on that first tee and you'll get a buzz, no
it's
doubt.
It's quite the atmosphere.
Yeah,
it's a cross-sport atmosphere, isn't it? It moves away from regular golf atmosphere, and it's almost bedlam. It's just incredible. Voices and noise and every group that comes on the tee, Bob, there's goosebumps for people that are watching, people that are playing. What about your abiding memory of this Ryder Cup?
Well, it has to be the volume of the galleries. But you have to bear in mind one thing. You know, we hear the number 50-plus thousand spectators in attendance. It doesn't sound like a lot compared to a lot of other sporting events, but when you put those 50,000 on just four holes, because there are only four matches, Friday and Saturday, both in the morning and the afternoon, it is an incredible number of people following such few matches. And I'll hear those roars probably as I'm being clapped upstairs. Hopefully upstairs. Maybe I'll be shown the doorway to downstairs.
No, I think Bob, you'll have a bit of time in the waiting room, but you'll get there.
That's all you can hope for in this world, have time in that waiting room.
Jamie, when you're out on the golf course, when you're at an away venue like the Europeans were this time at Hazeltine, the noise on the golf course is incredible. But what is really fun for the fans is you can tell what the roar is, who it's for.
Yeah, you can, can't you? From a long way away as well, can't you? You just know something big's happening. Mind you, the 3-foot par putts are being cheered, aren't they? Let alone anything hold from distance. So you're never quite sure. what it's for. But
you're not think you can tell the difference between American?
Of course you can. Oh, that's good news, America. They didn't seem to be so many European fans at this away match, I would say. I didn't see so many. Maybe there were.
I think it must have been the biggest crowds ever at a Ryder Cup. Oh, 50,000 plus each
day. Whatever they said, add on 10,000.
Would you really go that far?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot more in there than
sometimes it was 10, 20 deep. All the way down the hole.
Yeah, there was a lot more in there than the official figures, I'm sure of that.
Well, let's hear and leave the closing words to two of the finest players in the game, Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth.
It really is something that we're going to enjoy for the next couple of years as we get ready to try and defend it. And I'm already talking about that because I love this week so much. And we're looking forward to going to Paris and trying to win one over there.
Obviously, we're very disappointed to lose. But at the same time, I think it keeps the Ryder Cup very interesting and gives it a great narrative going into Paris in 2 years' time.
Yeah, interesting view from Rory. And I think a lot of people had that view, Jamie, that it actually wouldn't be a bad thing if America won.
Of course, you don't want one team running away with it every time. It would have been hard for Davis Love. He's such a great gentleman. For him to lose, that would have been tough. I mean, obviously, I'd have preferred Darren to win it, to be honest with you, but the Americans just played a lot better. And yeah, I think we're all looking forward to Paris on a golf course that the Europeans know very well, Robert.
We do know that course very well, but do you know that course very well, the venue for 2018, Bob?
Well, I've talked extensively with Thomas LaVey, and he said it's going to be a magnificent venue for the Ryder Cup. The vantage points for spectators are incredible. And here's something interesting. We were talking about 50,000 plus at Hazeltine. According to Thomas LaVey, they're going to be 70,000 plus when we get to just outside of Paris in 2 years.
Bob, you're going to have so much fun. That course, Jamie, Le Golf National in Paris, is if you built a course to host a Ryder Cup, that's what it would look like.
Well, especially the finish, back nine, lots of water. 15's a fantastic par four. These guys are hitting four on off the tee, but it's a second shot to the island green to grab your attention. Water on 16 as well, and the 18th's a really tough par four, again to an island green.
Well, let's hear from the man who's in the hot seat, Thomas Bjorn, right now. You and Murray and myself caught up with him a couple of days ago and I asked him how it felt to be captain.
It's a bit overwhelming. This week has been a lot, but it's kind of slowly starting to realise what's ahead of you. I think speaking to a couple of the former captains, I don't think you can really imagine what this whole thing implies. But we'll take it one step at a time. At least we've got plenty of time to go with. But it's a bit overwhelming at the moment. But once we get on the other side of New Year, we'll start doing the work and get into it properly. But it's nice having this time to kind of let it sink in and then get into it after New Year.
Thomas, congratulations. You're the first Dane to captain Europe. What would that mean, not just to you, but to Denmark as well?
It's a bit like getting the captaincy. I think I don't think people really can figure out what this is going to mean. But you know, it's when you're a small country and you don't have that kind of success on the world stage all of the time in different sports, when things like this happen, it's like everybody just gets very excited and get together about something. And it's a road that I'm really looking forward to taking Danish golf on and really include them in the whole experience. You know, I'm very well aware that my job is about the 12 players that are going to France and representing the tour, but I want to take, you know, take Danish golf on this road with me, because I think that's important for golf in Denmark, but also it's important for me to kind of make sure that I remember where I come from, and Danish golf deserves to be on this trip with me because it's done so much for me in the past.
You've been a player, Thomas, in the Ryder Cup, a vice-captain. Now you're a captain. How hard is it going to be for you to pick your vice-captains?
Well, I think there's just so many valid candidates for the vice-captaincy, but, you know, you also got to sit back, and there's a long time till the points start. And a lot of those people that have been vice-captains in the past and also been captains, you know, you wouldn't put past any of them to qualify for the team. So I think this is just a time to sit back and see how the whole thing develops. There's a core group of people that's been around the Ryder Cup for years, and we've been successful with that. And I'm sure I won't be far away from a lot of those people, but you know, I'd rather see them play golf than sit on the sidelines. So it's a great honour to be part of any Ryder Cup team, captain, vice-captain or player. But, you know, the biggest and best thing is to be out there and doing it on the golf course. And I just got to sit back and let everybody play their golf and see where they are. And then, you know, come 2018, we'll start making up our mind about the team behind. But there's certainly a lot of great people to choose from.
Thomas, it's been quite a journey. You go back to 95, you won the Challenge Tour there with four victories and what was a record sum at that point, just over £50,000. Came on to the Tour and won a Loch Lomond, a wonderful victory up there. Where does being chosen as Ryder Cup captain come in these 21 years for you?
No, it's a different thing. You know, you can take all your playing merits and kind of, you know, put them up there and say, this is my biggest moment, this is the best thing I've done. But I think this is a different thing. It's just the European Tour and players on the tour and people around the tour saying, you know, you've done so much in your career and you deserve to get this honour. So as an honour, it's the greatest thing that I'll ever get and ever achieve. But I don't like comparing it to anything that I achieved as a player. This is an achievement more for the person I am and for what I've done for the tour, I think, than for what I've done playing-wise. So I don't really like comparing it to. I just really, I'm really, really honoured to be able to represent the tour and Ryder Cup Europe for the years to come. But, it's an amazing moment for me personally. But my golfing career is what it is. This is something completely different.
Thomas, you've been a regular supporter of the French Open. You know Le Golf National very well. Where do you rate that course in Europe?
Certainly as what we play on tour, it's right there up in the top. It's a fantastic golf course. It tests every aspect of your game. And what's so great about that golf course is that you can go along nicely and you can, but you know that those last six or seven holes are coming at you and you've got to try and keep everything together. And as much as they offer opportunities, they also offer disasters. And that makes for a great golf course. You know, you just got to play great golf for 18 holes. And as a venue for the Ryder Cup, it would be just amazing. I don't think we'll have seen any venue that comes close to that. It'd be really spectator-friendly. It'd be a great scene for TV. And the players, you know, our players love playing the golf course. They enjoy it. And they enjoy the surroundings of the golf course. So it's as a venue, you couldn't ask for more for a Ryder Cup, that's for sure.
How hard is it, Thomas, for you to, going forward, be able to concentrate on your own game now that you have the captaincy?
That's obviously ahead of me, and it'll be what it'll be. You know, I want to play golf. I want to be out there with the players, and I know myself well enough that when I'm on the golf course, I'm very, very determined and very focused on my own golf. But I'm sure there'll be periods of times where Ryder Cup will take over, and being there 100% mentally on the golf course will be difficult. But I'm sure there'll be times where I can get down to concentrate a bit on my own golf. My big advantage, I think, on this issue is that I've been used to having distractions with my chairmanship of the tournament committee, that there's always been things going on in the background and things that I have to deal with in years gone past and still been able to play. So I think that will stand me well. You know, Ryder Cup and Ryder Cup captaincy is bigger than many jobs. So, you know, I don't know how big the distractions are going to be, but certainly I'm going to try and play as well as I can. But winning in France is going to be my main priority for the next 2 years and not really my own goal.
I'm just wondering, Thomas, now you are the captain going forward to 2018. In your domestic scene at home, have you got like the captain's teacup and the captain's slippers and the captain's dressing gown? Tell us the story.
No, I got a captain's armband, but I don't know if that's about it. I don't think we'll live that way. You know, I am the captain, but I'm also very well aware that I'll only be as good as the 12 players that play for me. And, you know, we'll try and get the best team possible together. And that's the focus for the near future, is to try and make everything work for the players so we can go and win it back. We feel uncomfortable when we don't have that trophy on the side of the Atlantic.
So you are the man, Thomas, to grasp that back from the Americans when we get to Paris?
I hope so. You know, I hope I am. The players are very supportive and it would be a great road together. You know, it's easy to stand up and say, we're going to do this and we're going to win it back and we'll do everything that we can to do that. But always remember, you know, there's 12 guys on the other side that are very capable as well, and they certainly showed that at Hastings. So, you know, it's a tough task. It's a road ahead that's going to have its bumps and it's going to have throw up things at you that you've got to deal with at the time. But hopefully when we are in Paris, we've got 12 guys together that will stand as a unit and do their utmost to win the trophy back. And that's all that I can ask of them. And that's all I think can be asked of me, is that we give everything that we have, and then the result will be what it'll be.
Thomas, you're the right man for the job. Congratulations on the appointment, and we'll see you early in 2017. Have a great Christmas.
Thank you very much.
And let's hear the thoughts of some of the players on what they think of the Bjorn appointment and some of the players that want to be there themselves in 2018.
He's someone that's not only got a lot of experience in Ryder Cups as a player, but in the last quite a few Ryder Cups that I can remember, he's been there as a vice-captain helping out. He's been on the board. You know, there's nothing Thomas doesn't know about the Ryder Cup, and I think, you know, for him, it'll be a huge honour. He'll take it very well, and he's going to do a fantastic job.
I think it's a great appointment. He's been a great player for many, many years, and he gets a lot of respect from the guys. So I think as an appointment for a Ryder Cup captain, for me, there was no one else really who it could have been in 2 years' time in Paris.
Obviously very, very happy for Thomas. I mean, he's played lots of Ryder Cups. He's been vice-captain in many of them. He has the respect from all the players, so I really think he's going to be a great captain. He knows all about the Ryder Cup already. He definitely has a very strong fighting character, so I think those are good attributes for a captain.
He'll be very vocal. He's not quiet. He never has been quiet. And, you know, Thomas will be very thoughtful and do what I believe is a fantastic job.
He's a very strong character. He doesn't take a lot of nonsense from anyone. So he's a guy, I think, who you can lean on at times, and he's strong enough to kind of take it. So, I'm looking forward to what the next 20-odd months brings for Thomas, and hopefully, yeah, we can be there next year in Paris.
I think Thomas knows the course exceptionally well. He's played it so many times. And, I think he's going to be a good European captain.
Well, they were the thoughts of Ian Poulter, Rafa Cabrera-Bayer and Danny Willett, who, of course, all three of them will be hoping to be there in 2018. So, Jamie, 2 years to go. Who do you think is going to win?
Be tight, Rob. The US team's turned a corner. They've got a lot of strong players. You know, you look at Brooks Koepka as well. He played some really good stuff. He's still got Spieth, the young man. Dustin Johnson's going to be. They're going to be a tough side. It'll be an even game.
But we'll have six rookies if they get back in the team that at least now have played a Ryder Cup, and they know what it feels like.
Yeah, of course. And who's to know what's going to happen between now and then? Obviously, the Europeans can set the course up how they want it, as opposed to how the Americans want it, with no rough and cut the limbs down out the trees. So we'll be tightening up and slowing the greens down.
And a prediction then? I didn't quite get that from you.
I think Europeans will win, obviously, Robert.
So, Bob, I'm going to hand it over to you. 2018, you'll be in Paris. You'll be sampling all that the Champs-Élysées has to show you and, of course, be part of the Ryder Cup coverage. What do you think?
We're very talented. We tasted victory at Hazeltine. I don't see any reason why we can't make it two in a row with a victory in France.
Oh, that's fight and talk. It's fight and talk indeed. That's it for now. Next week, we'll look back on all the 2016 four major championships and those tremendous victories for Danny Willett, Dustin Johnson, Jimmy Walker, and, of course, Henrik Stenson after that extraordinary final round at Royal Troon. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. But for now, from Bob Bubka, Jamie Spencer, myself, Robert Lee, it's goodbye, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.